Welcome to the Rail Market Update on the State of Freight podcast, brought to you by FTR, where we share timely transportation intelligence with you on a weekly basis. The Rail Market Update is hosted by FTR's Vice President of Rail and Intermodal, Todd Tranowski. As Todd presents the information in the podcast, you can follow along and review the graphs and indicators by downloading a PDF or PowerPoint version of the presentation from our podcast landing page. A link to the PDF is available now at www.ftrintel.com/podcast. From there, you can also find past episodes and downloads of the Rail Market Update, as well as the weekly Trucking Market Update with Avery Weiss and much more. That link again is www.ftrintel.com/podcast.
Welcome to FTR's weekly Trucking Market Update. I'm Avery Weiss, Vice President of Trucking. This is episode 233 for the week of October 2nd, 2023. Before we start, a reminder you can download a PDF with graphics related to this discussion at www.ftrintel.com/podcast. To begin this week, let's look at changes in the for-hire carrier population during the third quarter. The quarter saw nearly 20,000 net revocations of trucking authority. That's the total number of revocations minus the number of reinstatements. And that's nearly 3,000 fewer than what happened in the second quarter. It's also the lowest quarterly number in a year, according to FTR's analysis of Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration data. However, I would caution interpreting this data as an indication that market conditions are improving for very small carriers, which of course make up the vast majority of those carriers that fail. The data FTR tracks lags by 2 or more months due to the steps and procedures involved in revoking a carrier's operating authority. Therefore, the carrier failures in the third quarter really do not reflect the surge in diesel prices that occurred during mid-July and since then. So let's just see what the data looks like in October and November. Clearly, diesel prices and spot rates are the two big factors that we would look at least in the immediate term. Meanwhile, the number of newly authorized trucking firms continued to fall, totaling around 15,500 in the third quarter, for the lowest quarterly total since the second quarter of 2020. Even so, the number of new carriers is still running 4,000 to 5,000 above what we were seeing immediately prior to the pandemic. We've talked about this previously and the reasons behind it, including technological advancements that allow intermediaries to better manage capacity of very small carriers. Of course, one factor we cannot ignore is California's AB5 law, which appears to be the principal reason that new carrier creation in that state is still running almost 1,000 a quarter ahead of the pre-pandemic level as truck owners convert from the now illegal leased owner-operator model in that state to operating as independent for-hire carriers. During the third quarter, the percentage of all new carriers that are based in California rose to 13.6%. That is the highest since the spike that occurred in the first quarter of 2020, just as AB5 was taking effect, but it had not been put on hold yet by the courts temporarily as it applied to motor carriers, and that, of course, came off when the Supreme Court in June of last year said California could go ahead and enforce the law. With both new carriers and net revocations falling, about 4,300 carriers left the market on a net basis in the third quarter. That's lower than the more than 5,000 in the second quarter, but basically in line with the fourth quarter of last year and the first quarter of this year. Okay, let's get to the weekly data, starting with diesel prices, which increased after the unexpected decrease in the prior week, but not by very much. The national average price of on-highway diesel ticked up just 0.7 of a cent to $4.593 a gallon during the week ended October 2nd. As you would imagine, given such a small change nationwide, prices were mixed regionally, although no region saw a huge move in either direction. The largest increases were 6.1 cents in California and 2.6 cents in the lower Atlantic region. The largest decreases were 3.9 cents on the West Coast, except for California, and 2.3 cents in the Rocky Mountain region. Meanwhile, the good news is that crude prices are not steadily rising. In fact, the October 2nd closing for West Texas Intermediate of $88.82 a barrel was the lowest since September 13th. However, it's definitely a bit early to start celebrating. Just three trading sessions earlier than that, WTI closed at $93.68 a barrel. That was the highest price since late August of last year. Even as prices generally have risen in the past few months, we have seen volatility. So we're certainly not out of the woods for $100 a barrel crude. Okay, let's talk about the spot market for truck freight during the week ended September 29th, which is week 39 of the year. Total broker posted rates in the truck stop system moved higher during the week as gains for other equipment types offset a decline in refrigerated spot rates. Flatbed spot rates have risen in four of the past 5 weeks, while dry van spot rates increased after two down weeks. Refrigerated rates were down for the fourth straight week and are at their lowest point since late July. Recent week-to-week moves, however, have been at least as strong as seasonal expectations for all equipment types. Okay, let's look at rates. The broker posted rate increased about 2.5 cents after holding steady in the prior week. They're about 9% below the same week last year. That's the least negative year-over-year comparison since August of last year, and more than 3% below the five-year average. The deficit versus the five-year average is the lowest since June. Looking at segments, dry van spot rates increased almost 3 cents after declining 2 cents in the prior week. Rates are more than 7% below the same week last year, nearly 9% below the five-year average. Refrigerated rates decreased 2.5 cents after falling more than 6 cents in the prior week. Those rates are nearly 9% below the same 2022 week and about 7% below average. And flatbed spot rates increased nearly 3.5 cents after rising 1.5 cents during the prior week. Rates were more than 13% below the same week last year and 2% below the five-year average. Total load activity rose 7.5% after declining about 5% in the prior week. Volume was nearly 7% below the same week last year, about 24% below the five-year average for the week. The year-over-year comparison, by the way, that little less than 7%, was the least negative since July of 2022. But actually, that week was an outlier. Volume has not been consistently stronger than it is now relative to the prior year since March of last year. Spot rates rose in all regions, led by the West Coast. And let's wrap up on spot by looking at volume by equipment type. Dry van loads increased more than 8% after declining nearly 5% in the prior week. They were down in the Northeast, but up in all other regions. Volume in dry van was more than 12% below the same week last year and more than 23% below the five-year average. Refrigerated loads ticked up basically 1.5%. That was after falling nearly 12% in the prior week. Loads were up in the Southeast, West Coast, and South Central regions, but down elsewhere. Volume was about 21% below the same week last year, almost 29% below the five-year average. And then finally, flatbed loads increased more than 7% after declining nearly 5% in the prior week. Loads were up in all regions. Volume was actually 0.4% higher than it was in the same week last year. That's the first time we've seen a positive year-over-year comparison for flatbed since March of 2022. Volume was nearly 32% below the five-year average for the week. Okay, let's wrap up the weekly data with a look at mortgage rates, which rose to the highest level since December of 2000. Average rate on a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage was 7.31% in the latest week, according to Freddie Mac. The organization noted that one big difference, though, between 2023 and 2000 is that not only do we have high interest rates, but we also have rising home prices, and that is creating headwinds both for buyers and sellers. So we have a housing market that's just really kind of gummed up by a whole bunch of motivations that are keeping sellers and buyers on the sidelines. We didn't get much in the way of monthly indicators in the latest week. We did get some notable ones, and we'll start with the manufacturing sector. The Institute for Supply Management's closely watched manufacturing index improved by 1.4 points in September to 49%. That is still in contraction, although it is getting close to the threshold between contraction and expansion, and it's been in contraction for 11 months. The two components of the ISM index that are most directly associated with freight demand improved, and one even managed to sneak into expansion territory. The new orders component rose 2.4 points to 49.2%, still in contraction territory where it's been for more than a year. But the production component increased 2.5 points to 52.5%, which is in expansion territory. However, there is a bit of a warning sign, and that is the fact that the weakest component of the entire ISM index is backlogs. Those fell 1.7% to 42.4%, which is quite weak. So to put this into perspective, what essentially we're saying is that production is indeed improving, but because backlogs are falling, there is an increased chance that the manufacturing will need to cut back on production down the road as they run out of orders to fill. Okay, so let's look at demand for manufacturing as measured by orders for durable manufactured goods. Now, as often is the case, civilian aircraft were a drag on durable goods orders, although they also often are a big boost to those orders. But in August, total new orders for durable manufactured goods ticked up just 0.2%, but a key factor was a almost 16% drop in civilian aircraft orders. By the way, defense aircraft orders were up fairly sharply, but that sector is far smaller than civilian aircraft. If we exclude transportation equipment, new orders for durable goods increased 0.4% and were up 1.1% year over year. The largest increase in new orders was for computers and related equipment. New orders for core capital goods, which are non-defense capital goods excluding aircraft, increased almost 1% for the strongest gain since January. The Census Bureau's data on manufacturing orders is not adjusted for inflation. So if we adjust core capital goods by the producer price index for private capital equipment, we estimate that new orders, that real new orders for core capital goods were up 0.3% in August rather than the 0.9% in the nominal data. Orders were up 0.8% year over year, however, both in nominal and in real terms. Okay, let's wrap up with a look at the consumer sector, followed by the inventory situation that is linked considerably to that sector. Real consumer spending ticked up 0.1% in August, as services spending increased 0.2%, but goods spending, which is a smaller share of the overall spending, eased by 0.2%. Real spending was down in both durable and non-durable goods, but durable goods saw the larger decrease at 0.3%, led by motor vehicles and parts. Real spending on non-durable goods, which is a larger category than durable, eased 0.1%. The personal savings rate eased to 3.9%, which is the lowest since December's 3.4%. Now, regarding savings, there is some good news, sort of, I guess, in that the latest data from the Bureau of Economic Analysis represents a comprehensive historical update of economic data, and that includes revisions for Americans' income back to 1979, and revisions in consumer spending back to 2013. Now, why does that matter? Well, as it turns out, Americans were not saving as much of their disposable income prior to the pandemic than we thought. The prior data indicated that households had been saving on average, 7.6% of their disposable income. The updated data shows that rather than being 7.6% of their income, it was actually 6.2%. That, of course, is a significant difference. And basically what I'm saying is that means that the 3.9% savings rate is still quite low, but it's not as low as we thought it was compared to the pre-pandemic norm. And of course, there was that period during 2020 and 2021 when the savings rate skyrocketed. So as we talked about previously, Americans are still in a fairly decent position in aggregate terms, in that they paid down a lot of debt and still have some cash on hand. Obviously, there are differences. There are clearly households that are hurting, but in the aggregate, we still have a relatively healthy consumer, which is one reason why consumer spending is still holding. Okay, finally today, let's look at inventories. Retail inventories rose just over 1% in August for the strongest increase in a year. The automotive sector has been mostly responsible for recent inventory gains, and indeed, motor vehicles and parts inventories posted a strong 2.3% increase during August. But the inventory gain for the rest of retail was 0.6%, and that is the strongest since December. Based on preliminary retail sales data for August, the inventory changes result in a slight increase in the total inventories to sales ratio to 1.31, up from 1.3, but that is far below the average of 1.47 in 2019, and the gap, of course, is due to the still highly depleted automotive sector inventories, which, given the UAW strike, probably will only for the next month or two grow even larger. Now, if we exclude automotive, the inventories to sales ratio was unchanged at 1.19, which is only slightly below the 2019 average of 1.22. Okay, let's recap some key takeaways for the week. The net decline in carrier population in the third quarter was lower than it was in the second quarter, but on par with recent declines. Diesel prices edged higher after a one-week decline. Dry van and flatbed spot rate gains offset a decline in refrigerated rates. Mortgage rates rose to their highest level since late 2000 in the latest week. The ISM Manufacturing Index improved modestly in September. Real consumer spending was basically flat in August. Durable goods orders rose modestly in August. And retail inventories moved higher in August, but stayed more or less steady compared to sales. Next week, we will dig into the labor market with a look at job openings for August and payroll employment, unemployment, and so on for September, including, of course, the latest on trucking jobs. Plus, we'll recap the week in diesel prices and the spot market for truck freight as usual. That's it for FTR's Trucking Market Update, episode 233 for the week of October 2nd, 2023. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, and we hope you will join us next week.
That's it for this week's Rail Market Update on the State of Freight podcast. The Rail Market Update will be published each week along with a downloadable PDF of the presentation. If you find this transportation intelligence useful, please take a moment to give us a positive rating on your podcast platform of choice and send us your feedback by email at podcast@ftrintel.com. You can find more publicly available State of Freight content and download the PDF of today's presentation by going to www.ftrintel.com/podcast. FTR is the leader in freight transportation forecasting in North America, providing consistently reliable reports for trucking, rail, and intermodal transportation, as well as providing demand analysis for commercial vehicle and rail car. For more information about the work of FTR, visit www.ftrintel.com or call us at 888-988-1699 to find out which publications will best support your business.